Chapter 1. I had done a few things and earned a few pence. I had perhaps even had time to begin to think I was finer than was perceived by the patronizing. But when I take the little measure of my course, a fidgety habit, for it's none of the longest yet, I count my real start from the evening George Corvick, breathless and worried, came in to ask me a service. He had done more things than I, and earned more pence, though there were chances for cleverness I thought he sometimes missed. I could only, however, that evening declare to him that he never missed one for kindness. There was almost rapture in hearing it proposed to me to prepare for underscore the middle underscore, the organ of our lucubrations, so called from the position in the week of its day of appearance, an article for which he had made himself responsible and of which, tied up with a stout string, he laid on my table the subject. I pounced upon my opportunity, that is on the first volume of it, and paid scant attention to my friend's explanation of his appeal. What explanation could be more to the point than my obvious fitness for the task? I had written on Hugh Vereker, but never a word in underscore the middle underscore, where my dealings were mainly with the ladies and the minor poets. This was his new novel, an advance copy, and whatever much or little it should do for his reputation, I was clear on the spot as to what it should do for mine. Moreover, if I always read him as soon as I could get hold of him, I had a particular reason for wishing to read him now. I had accepted an invitation to Bridges for the following Sunday, and it had been mentioned in Lady Jane's note that Mr. Vereker was to be there. I was young enough for a flutter at meeting a man of his renown, and innocent enough to believe the occasion would demand the display of an acquaintance with his last. Corvick, who had promised a review of it, had not even had time to read it. He had gone to pieces in consequence of news requiring, as on precipitate reflection he judged, that he should catch the night mail to Paris. He had had a telegram from Gwendolyn Ermey in answer to his letter offering to fly to her aid. I knew already about Gwendolyn Ermey. I had never seen her, but I had my ideas, which were mainly to the effect that Corvick would marry her if her mother would only die. That lady seemed now in a fair way to oblige him, after some dreadful mistake about a climate or a cure she had suddenly collapsed on the return from abroad. Her daughter, unsupported and alarmed, desiring to make a rush for home but hesitating at the risk, had accepted our friend's assistance, and it was my secret belief that at sight of him Mrs. Ermey would pull round. His own belief was scarcely to be called secret, it discernibly at any rate differed from mine. He had showed me Gwendolyn's photograph with the remark that she wasn't pretty but was awfully interesting. She had published at the age of 19 a novel in 3 volumes, Deep Down, about which, in underscore the middle underscore, he had been really splendid. He appreciated my present eagerness and undertook that the periodical in question should do no less. Then at the last, with his hand on the door, he said to me, "Of course you'll be all right, you know." Seeing I was a trifle vague, he added, "I mean you won't be silly." Silly, about Vereker. Why, what do I ever find him but awfully clever? Well, what's that but silly? What on earth does awfully clever mean? For God's sake, try to get underscore to underscore him. Don't let him suffer by our arrangement. Speak of him, you know, if you can, as underscore I underscore should have spoken of him. I wondered an instant. You mean as far and away the biggest of the lot, that sort of thing? Corvick almost groaned. Oh, you know, I don't put them back to back that way, it's the infancy of art. But he gives me a pleasure so rare, the sense of, he mused a little, something or other. I wondered again. The sense, pray, of want? My dear man, that's just what I want underscore you underscore to say. Even before he had banged the door, I had begun, book in hand, to prepare myself to say it. I sat up with Vereker half the night. Corvick couldn't have done more than that. He was awfully clever, I stuck to that, but he wasn't a bit the biggest of the lot. I didn't allude to the lot, however, I flattered myself that I emerged on this occasion from the infancy of art. It's all right, they declared vividly at the office, and when the number appeared I felt there was a basis on which I could meet the great man. It gave me confidence for a day or two, then that confidence dropped. I had fancied him reading it with relish, but if Corvick wasn't satisfied, how could Vereker himself be? I reflected indeed that the heat of the admirer was sometimes grosser even than the appetite of the scribe. Corvick at all events wrote me from Paris a little ill-humoredly. Mrs. Ermey was pulling round, and I hadn't at all said what Vereker gave him the sense of. Chapter 2. The effect of my visit to Bridges was to turn me out for more profundity. Hugh Vereker, as I saw him there, was of a contact so void of angles that I blushed for the poverty of imagination involved in my small precautions. If he was in spirits, it wasn't because he had read my review. In fact, on the Sunday morning I felt sure he hadn't read it, though underscore the middle underscore had been out 3 days and bloomed, I assured myself, in the stiff garden of periodicals which gave one of the ormolu tables the air of a stand at a station. The impression he made on me personally was such that I wished him to read it, and I corrected to this end with a surreptitious hand what might be wanting in the careless conspicuity of the sheet. I'm afraid I even watched the result of my maneuver, but up to luncheon I watched in vain. When afterwards, in the course of our gregarious walk, I found myself for half an hour, not perhaps without another maneuver, at the great man's side, the result of his affability was a still livelier desire that he shouldn't remain in ignorance of the peculiar justice I had done him. It wasn't that he seemed to thirst for justice, on the contrary I hadn't yet caught in his talk the faintest grunt of a grudge, a note for which my young experience had already given me an ear. Of late he had had more recognition, and it was pleasant, as we used to say in underscore the middle underscore, to see how it drew him out. He wasn't of course popular, but I judged one of the sources of his good humor to be precisely that his success was independent of that. He had nonetheless become in a manner the fashion, the critics at least had put on a spurt and caught up with him. We had found out at last how clever he was, and he had had to make the best of the loss of his mystery. I was strongly tempted, as I walked beside him, to let him know how much of that unveiling was my act, and there was a moment when I probably should have done so had not one of the ladies of our party, snatching a place at his other elbow, just then appealed to him in a spirit comparatively selfish. It was very discouraging, I almost felt the liberty had been taken with myself. I had had on my tongue's end, for my own part, a phrase or two about the right word at the right time, but later on I was glad not to have spoken, for when on our return we clustered at tea I perceived Lady Jane, who had not been out with us, brandishing underscore the middle underscore with her longest arm. She had taken it up at her leisure, she was delighted with what she had found, and I saw that, as a mistaken a man may often be a felicity in a woman, she would practically do for me what I hadn't been able to do for myself. Some sweet little truths that needed to be spoken, I heard her declare, thrusting the paper at rather a bewildered couple by the fireplace. She grabbed it away from them again on the reappearance of Hugh Vereker, who after our walk had been upstairs to change something. I know you don't in general look at this kind of thing, but it's an occasion really for doing so. You underscore haven apostrophe T underscore seen it? Then you must. The man has actually got underscore at underscore you, at what underscore I underscore always feel, you know. Lady Jane threw into her eyes a look evidently intended to give an idea of what she always felt, but she added that she couldn't have expressed it. The man in the paper expressed it in a striking manner. Just see there, and there, where I've dashed it, how he brings it out. She had literally marked for him the brightest patches of my prose, and if I was a little amused Vereker himself may well have been. He showed how much he was when before us all Lady Jane wanted to read something aloud. I liked at any rate the way he defeated her purpose by jerking the paper affectionately out of her clutch. He'd take it upstairs with him and look at it on going to dress. He did this half an hour later, I saw it in his hand when he repaired to his room. That was the moment at which, thinking to give her pleasure, I mentioned to Lady Jane that I was the author of the review. I did give her pleasure, I judged, but perhaps not quite so much as I had expected. If the author was only me the thing didn't seem quite so remarkable. Hadn't I had the effect rather of diminishing the luster of the article than of adding to my own? Her ladyship was subject to the most extraordinary drops. It didn't matter, the only effect I cared about was the one it would have on Vereker up there by his bedroom fire. At dinner I watched for the signs of this impression, tried to fancy some happier light in his eyes, but to my disappointment Lady Jane gave me no chance to make sure. I had hoped she'd call triumphantly down the table, publicly demand if she hadn't been right. The party was large, there were people from outside as well, but I had never seen a table long enough to deprive Lady Jane of a triumph. I was just reflecting in truth that this interminable board would deprive underscore me underscore of one when the guest next me, dear woman, she was Miss Boyle, the vicar's sister, a robust unmodulated person, had the happy inspiration and the unusual courage to address herself across it to Vereker, who was opposite, but not directly, so that when he replied they were both leaning forward. She inquired, artless body, what he thought of Lady Jane's panegyric, which she had read, not connecting it however with her right-hand neighbor, and while I strained my ear for his reply I heard him, to my stupefaction, call back gaily, his mouth full of bread, oh, it's all right, the usual twaddle. I had caught Vereker's glance as he spoke, but Miss Poyle's surprise was a fortunate cover for my own. You mean he doesn't do justice? Said the excellent woman. Vereker laughed out, and I was happy to be able to do the same. It's a charming article, he tossed us. Miss Poyle thrust her chin half across the cloth. Oh, you're so deep. She drove home. As deep as the ocean. All I pretend is that the author doesn't see, but a dish was at this point passed over his shoulder, and we had to wait while he helped himself. Doesn't see what? My neighbor continued. Doesn't see anything. Dear me, how very stupid.
Not a bit, Vereker laughed Maine. Nobody does.
The lady on his further side appealed to him, and Miss Poyle sank back to myself.
Nobody sees anything. She cheerfully announced, to which I replied that I had often thought so too, but had somehow taken the thought for a proof on my own part of a tremendous eye.
I didn't tell her the article was mine, and I observed that Lady Jane, occupied at the end of the table, had not caught Vereker's words. I rather avoided him after dinner, for I confess he struck me as cruelly conceited, and the revelation was a pain. The usual twaddle my acute little study. That one's admiration should have had a reserve or two could gall him to that point. I had thought him placid, and he was placid enough, such a surface was the hard polished glass that encased the bauble of his vanity. I was really ruffled, and the only comfort was that if nobody saw anything George Corvick was quite as much out of it as I. This comfort however was not sufficient, after the ladies had dispersed, to carry me in the proper manner, I mean in a spotted jacket and humming an air, into the smoking room. I took my way in some dejection to bed, but in the passage I encountered Mr. Vereker,